You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hey, you want that to go?
Couple of news takeouts this morning, and we begin with something you may have missed unless you have a PhD in economics. Finance contributor Louise Story joins us here in the studio. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
So Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke talked to Congress yesterday, and we're used to thinking of the Fed as having, you know, one lever. They can raise interest rates. But he was talking about mechanisms that the Fed can use that are really sophisticated, really complicated, but really important, and they moved the markets yesterday. Explain what he was talking about.
That's right, John. He was talking about this new lever that he got in October 2008. Congress gave him a new tool to control saving and lending in the markets. This is something that is often used in Europe, but not usually used in the U.S. And what this is it's interest on reserves.
The IOR.
Right. Right. And what he said is that he's going to, you know, possibly use that instead of his normal rate, the Fed funds rate. Now, let me explain the difference. The Fed funds rate, which is what he usually uses,
right,
influences the amount that banks pay each other to borrow from
right.
each other. Okay. And this interest on reserves is how much the Fed pays to banks for money they put in reserve at the banks. So the way to think about it is, if you're a consumer, let's say that a bank wants you to save more. They can either charge you more for borrowing,
right,
or they can pay you more to save. And what the Fed usually does is it usually pushes this rate to borrow up. It usually affects the Fed fund rates, making it harder, you know, more expensive for banks to borrow. But instead, they're going to pay banks more to save with them. So that's the different tool they're using. They're going to pay the banks more to save. And the effect it'll have on the economy is if banks are encouraged to increase their reserves at the Fed because they're paid more by the Fed to
right.
save, they'll have less money to lend out to all of us. And that
which
might drive
interest rates.
That's right.
Ah.
Drive up the cost to you.
And that could affect mortgages, mortgage resets, that
mortgages,
sort of thing.
It can affect everything, consumer borrowing in all different places, as well as business borrowing. So it may have very big impact.
Why was this so sensitive yesterday? It was a big breaking news story, and markets were moving up and down on it. Then people were going, oh, the IOR, what's happening?
Well, it's just very unusual for the Fed to use a new tool. I mean, as I said, they didn't have this until October 2008. People are jittery about will it work right? Will there be unintended consequences? I don't think that people thought he really explained his logic well for using this as opposed to the normal tool. So people are, it's just another uncertainty. People are wondering how will it work, but you know, it may turn out that it's a better tool.
And giving a sense of this spigot, it involves pumping trillions of dollars back into the economy if he actually ends up using this lever.
Well, if he uses this lever, it could certainly increase interest rates and encourage banks to save more with the Fed.
All right. Worth trillions. Finance contributor Louise Story, thanks for helping us out with that.
Thank you.
Now for a tech takeout. Yesterday, Google started buzzing. They've launched a new social networking service called Buzz. And if you're a Gmail user, it helps you share status updates, just like if you're on Twitter or on Facebook. Is this going to be the next big thing, just like Gmail was? We're going to go now to a Fast Company tech blogger and Wired writer, Cliff Quang. He's given Buzz a test drive. Cliff, you've tried it out.
Yes, I have. It's pretty easy to use, actually, and pretty intuitive once you start getting elbow deep into it.
So why would Google be interested in trying to move into this Twitter and Facebook model? We just heard reports that Twitter wasn't being used or wasn't very popular among young people.
Well, I think that what they looked at and saw was that the primacy of what they were offering through Gmail, which is like the central point through which you're communicating with all the people that you know, was getting sapped by things like Twitter and Facebook. And you know, in creating Buzz, they basically have a service that sort of mimics a lot of that functionality and tries to aggregate a lot of that information from Twitter, for example, and to sort of put Gmail's offering right back front and center.
How does this different from, you know, we use GChat here on the show to talk to one another as like an instant messaging service? How is this different from that?
You can think of it as a sort of group-wide instant messaging service in a lot of ways. I mean, it's most similar to Twitter in the sense that, it just allows you to post short messages that are broadcast to anybody that you're connected with. And the only difference with Twitter really being that, you know, it's through your Gmail contacts, and also it allows you a lot of, like, rich media embedding that Twitter doesn't allow you.
Some tech writers are pointing to some privacy concerns, though, about this Google Buzz, because it makes it instantly public who your email contacts are. So let's say, just for a journalist, let's say Louise Story has some private contacts or sources. Is everyone going to be able to see who she's emailing?
Well, you know, in theory, it'll allow you to edit that. But, you know, in practice, I think it's going to take people a little bit of getting used to understand what this is, you know, what this new thing that all of a sudden popped up as a tab in their Gmail is. So it could be a concern, but I think probably it's going to be addressed, you know, as people begin to use the service and as Google realizes, you know, what exactly people want from it.
Is Google in danger of trying to take on too much, of trying to diversify their service in too many directions?
I'm not sure if they're in danger, but what I will say is that, you know, they probably need to, you know, at some point slow down and rethink a lot of the things that they're doing, because I think that there's been so much growth in their offerings that, you know, you look back and a lot of them seem sort of hard to use or difficult to look at. You know, and Gmail is kind of an example of that. You know, it hasn't really changed in since it was introduced visually. So I think that they probably need to start refining it and making it better looking and easier to use, just like Twitter or Facebook, which is a big part of the appeal of both of those.
Cliff, before we go, does Google own the word Buzz?
There's been fights about that. I believe actually Yahoo introduced a service called Buzz. So no, I don't think they own the word Buzz, and that might be different in terms of branding. You know,
Cliff Huang blogs about design and tech for Fast Company. Also writes for Wired magazine. Thanks so much. Coming up, the psychiatric community is gathering today. They're going to talk about new names for illnesses, and we're going to talk about how that debate could actually shape mental health treatment for everybody. That's coming up in a few minutes.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.